Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 297 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and it's a bonus episode on Friday. And the reason it's a bonus is I've got so many guests at the moment, and I wanted to get this one out quickly because it's with Erwan Marinopoulos and Eugene Simon, who I was lucky enough to spend a few weeks working on a film with in France called Kill Ben Like. And Kill Ben Like has just been, after winning a load of awards at film festivals over the summer, it's been given a cinema release, and it comes out on November 22nd. Their screening's on the 22nd, the 23rd, and I think the 24th. But all of them only go ahead if enough tickets are sold. So it's done through a thing called Our Screen, O-U-R-S-C-R-E-E-N. So if you head to ourscreen.com and search Kill Ben Like, I'll put a link in the bio of this episode, in fact, to the screening list. And I'll be tweeting about it and all that, obviously. But if you buy your tickets, then that screening will happen. And I'd love you all to come. Since we've recorded this podcast, the poster's come out. And my name's on the poster, man. How exciting is that? That's never happened. This is the first film I've ever done that my name's on the poster. And it's screening at the View Cinema. If the tickets are sold, it's screening at the View at Thurrock Lakeside. I worked in Thurrock Lakeside in HMV for 5 years or so, man. So it's mad that I get to be part of a film that's on there. So it's really important to me. As said, these screenings only go ahead if you buy the tickets in advance. The cut-off date for ticket sales is November 17th, but the earlier you buy them, the better, because people will scroll through the listing and see, we only need two more sold to buy for that one to go ahead. For example, particularly in London, where there's a load. So then someone will buy it, and it'll be more likely to go ahead. So the earlier you kind of stick your flag in the ground, the better. So I'd really appreciate it. Even now, if you could just pause and go in the link and grab a ticket. I'll get onto the podcast because it's great. I loved catching up with Erwan and Eugene. They're both wonderful, wonderful people. We'll tell you a lot more about the film in brief. Again, so you can go and buy your tickets now. It's a murder mystery black comedy. You're going to love it. It's really good fun. The cast was amazing to work with. The crew was amazing to work with. But a thing I mentioned in the intro for the Wretch episode, I've seen Theo Von do this. He's a comedian in America and podcaster I'm a big fan of, and I really like it. Some of the most inspirational people I've met in my life over the years have been single parents, and it's a really fucking hard thing to do. So if you're listening to this and you've looked at the screenings and you fancy a screening, but you're a single parent, so you're kind of like, well, it's a Friday night or whatever, I can't really make that work, then drop me a DM on Facebook and we'll sort out covering your childcare for that evening. And you can go and see the film, enjoy the film, take it in, have a night off, because you work incredibly hard. And again, I know all parents work incredibly hard, and it's hard for all parents, but I'm just, there's a solitude in the single parent game, you know. And obviously I can't offer to cover everyone. So I'm not a rich man, but I'm putting this out there, because number one, because this screen means a lot to me. These screenings mean the world to me, and I want as many people to see them as possible, because I'm really proud of this film, and just proud that a film that I've been part of is in the cinemas. But it's only in the cinemas if you guys buy the tickets. I can't stress that enough. As said, November 17th is the cut-off date to decide if these screenings go ahead or not. So yeah, if you could grab some tickets now, that'd be great. I'm going to stop rambling. This is a bonus episode, 297 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, with Erwan and Eugene. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. I'm rolling. I'm joined today by two people. It's rare I have two people on, but it felt key in this situation. I'm joined by Erwan and Eugene. How are you guys?
Hey, good, very, very good.
Very, very good.
I've travelled from just across London, and everyone's travelled across the English Channel.
So, absolutely,
you're right for both of us.
That's a good effort on everyone's part.
Yeah.
I feel very much in the middle of coming in from Essex, so I'm the mediator in every way here. So I'm going to just, you know how people enjoy podcasts; it's an exciting medium, but equally, it's long. So everyone always definitely listens to the beginning, not always definitely there at the end. That's just the nature of podcasts. So right at the beginning, I want to talk about why we're here and the reason. And I'll give a brief introduction, but the three of us did a film together. Erwan was the writer and director and Eugene was the lead. And it's finally coming out. It's getting a cinema release. After you guys have been touring about film festivals, it's been winning awards. Eugene's been wowing people with his capabilities of speaking in French and answering in multiple languages to the press. So let's talk about that. How exciting is it for it to be out and the journey in the last year, I guess?
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been an amazing year. I mean, we've had about 40 festival selections around the world in different countries like Thailand, New Zealand, Australia, Brazil, the States, here in England. I mean, we won awards. This guy won a Best Actor award in Brazil. Amazing. I mean, it was an incredible journey. And it's so much fun to share the film with such different audiences, yeah, especially comedy, and see how they react, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, where they're laughing, where they're really enjoying specific scenes of the film. It was amazing.
Because it's really interesting, because I think independent cinema tends to lean heavier on drama. Like, mm-hmm, comedy seems to, there'd be a lot more TV and YouTube and that kind of thing. It's been an obsession of mine for ages that so many comedians create their own content on YouTube, mm-hmm, yet there's, yes, no independent drama being made for YouTube,
yeah,
and for Vimeo.
Sure,
and
sure,
right. And I wish, yeah, there was more of that, to just go, look, yeah, yeah, let's, yeah, make a 5-minute short and it be this powerful thing. But, mm-hmm, how was that to take it? Because again, we'll get into the making of the film. It felt so personal and intimate to all. Like, I was delighted to be part of such a great ensemble where everyone seemed to be pulling together in the same direction. Mm-hmm. How was it to then go to Brazil with that and to go to all these other places? Because obviously, Eugene, you've done Game of Thrones, and that's, mm, huge, international, global. That's to be expected, mm-hmm, that it's everywhere. But this small film that we made over a few months in France, mm-hmm, how was, mm-hmm, that to go, again, Brazil's the one that jumps out to me. How mad is that?
It was incredible. It was amazing. I mean, the most extraordinary part of it was seeing Erwan in all these different places, because we kept jumping, because it was such a strange thing. It was like the film Jumper. I was suddenly, you know, there would be a small period of time between one festival and another, and then I would just, you know, apparate into another country, and then Erwan would be there, and we were both doing it at the same time. So we would have these series of audiences who, as Erwan said, responded in such different ways, and it was kind of really interesting to see kind of what people find funny in different countries. Like in the UK, people laugh particularly when someone had a horrible demise.
Yeah.
So for example, when a particular character gets shot, or when someone has a really sudden unpleasant occurrence, the Brits find it absolutely hilarious. And so I'm sort of going, I see, that's my education on British people now.
Yeah.
Whereas the Brazilians, for example, absolutely adored it whenever, I can't remember what it was specifically that absolutely killed them, but they absolutely adored it when, they found all the action just really hilarious. So like, yes, all the action, they were always giggling whenever someone was running away, they found it particularly hilarious. And yeah, I just kept going like, yeah, and it was very, very funny to see.
I think situation comedy travels really well.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. Mm. Dialogues work too, but the situations, you know, when it's funny, it's funny. It's just,
yeah,
yeah.
So one of the things that kind of excited me about the script when I first read it, that it is a comedy, but it's a murder mystery. Mm. And no one was particular. I mean, obviously now Rian Johnson's new film is this huge murder mystery, Knives Out. It looks amazing.
it does.
A comedy murder mystery. But that's what was exciting about this, was it's a whodunit.
Totally,
to give a very brief description of it is, a guy called Ben Like, which is Eugene's character, starts to hear that a load of different people called Ben Like are being killed in London. So the police get all of them together and put them in one house, which is wonderfully ludicrous because that's helpful on both sides. It gets them all together and then people start to get picked off. And it's a wonderful kind of... I was reading the script, excited to see, for example... If I had done it, I wonder if it's me. Oh, no, is it? No, yes, it is. No, it isn't.
And it might be you. Who knows?
Exactly. But I mean, another beauty of it is it means they're all called Ben Likes. So it looks great on my IMDb.
Because
I'm in a film called Kill Ben Like, and I'm playing Ben Like. So clearly all of us are the lead. It's a wonderful scam.
All of us are winners. I love it. Literally every single actor who plays a character that has a speaking part is probably going to be considered to be the lead. Yeah. So we're all winning.
It's perfect. But so on your part, on the kind of origin of the script, what drew you to write in a murder mystery comedy type thing?
Well, first, because I love them. Second, because also I knew... Since it was, I've done lots of TV series in France, and I knew this was going to be my first feature, so I probably was not going to get like a huge budget. Yeah. So I thought, you know, what kind of films do I like and that I can manage to do well within a contained budget? And so the whodunit was something that I really like. I really like Agatha Christie's novels, and so I thought this could be a nice start. So I had the idea of the film, the whole Ben Likes getting killed in the same city thing. And then I thought we really need, and that's really something we worked on hard with my co-writers, Oliver Maltman and Jean-Christophe Establet. We really wanted to have a strong story before we started to write some jokes. Yeah. We really needed, you know, every scene to be surprising, lots of twists, people, you know, how in every scene, we try to get the audience surprised. Sometimes it's just little things, like this character. I'm not going to spoil it, but you know, a character that really looks like a tough, bad guy. Mm. He doesn't have the profession that you would imagine he has. Small things like that, and sometimes bigger twists. You know, who is a traitor and who's not, and just misleads all the time. So we really focused on writing the story before actually writing comedy.
I love that, and that it comes across because it maintains that intrigue. It's easy in comedy to think that the only thing is the gags and the punchlines, but that's not going to hold you through 90 minutes or 2 hours
totally
or whatever else. It's a beautiful combination of having that genuine intrigue, genuine uncertainty, and then getting to laugh at the mayhem that's caused along the way. So yeah, it works nicely.
And because also I started doing some videos on the internet before I did some TV series, and you know, we're all the same. I think our attention is very short.
Yeah.
So if you don't catch people's attention right away, and if you don't keep this attention by surprising people, you just lose the audience. So to me, it doesn't matter whether you're doing comedy or drama. You really need to work hard in the writing to keep people's attention.
One of the funniest things about this film, which I noticed as the more that we got into it and the more that I read it, was all the characters in it tend to go to what gives them the most energy and excitement and what keeps their attention. Like the most of them most of them are hooked on this idea that they've got to go to wherever the kind of most energy is. And Ben's kind of this, he's a sort of addict. He's kind of addicted to the idea that even though something terrible might be happening to him, he's absolutely hooked by what could be the most exciting possible outcome, even if it terrifies him.
So he's
constantly putting himself in positions where what seems to be the best option is the worst thing for him, because it's the most unknown, it's the most kind of ludicrous and ridiculous thing he could do. So he keeps making life worse for himself. And it's this constant battle to get him to stop making life worse for himself.
I think it's good. I loved what the pair of you did with the character, because I think the key relationship in any film is the director and the lead, and the director and the DOP, but I think they're kind of the three that everything else is important, but they're the two that if that's not right, it's not going to work. Rest of the relationships aren't going to work. And what you guys did with Ben as a character, it's confusing because they're all called Ben, but what you guys did with the main Ben as a character,
we'll come to that in a second,
Was that it was there was a subtle comment on modern times, because Ben isn't heroic and he isn't brave, but he's a YouTuber. So it's important to put himself in these situations. The motivation to put himself in some quite brave and dangerous situations isn't bravery or chivalry. It's, well, as you said, you need to be in these situations. You're kind of addicted to getting in these scrapes as such.
Yeah.
And that's such a thing of the modern times. The risks that people take for a selfie and stuff like that is mind-blowing. So it's not overdone, but it felt like a beautiful little sprinkle on there. It's like, this is... It brings such reality into the farce of what's being played out.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have brains. He doesn't have brawns, but he's got followers. But he's got a very loud voice. You know what I mean? That's the sort of miracle of his success. That's enough, apparently. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I love that. So how was it when you guys kind of... Or I'll start with you, Gene, then. What kind of drew you to this character and this role? Obviously, as we've touched upon... Game of Thrones was huge, and unlike a lot of the Game of Thrones guys, it wasn't your first thing. You've been acting for many years since a young lad, but it is always that scary thing of what do you do after the biggest series in the history of man. It's like, where do I go next? And it feels like you've made some really cool choices and going, let's do stuff that I can really get my teeth into and really have an influence on and an impact on, rather than slotting in the most respectful way, even to myself, as 8th or 9th on the call sheet. Just being, well, I was in Game of Thrones. Project.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that when I got the email through about this particular audition, I was very excited by, first of all, it was a completely new kind of genre that I hadn't done before. And I'd watched, you know, some films came to mind that it reminded me of. I could see from an early stage in reading it that there was a really cool Guy Ritchie kind of style on this, which I really enjoy his films, but I liked it because it gave me a chance to kind of go into a character who's got some real who's got so many personality defects and yet is driving the story. And I think it's one of the things about comedy that I don't know if this is, I think it's one of the things about this comedy that probably encouraged Erwan and maybe the co-writers to keep it centered around, well, keep it in a British, keep the characters being British, is because the kind of central theme is about just how madly dysfunctional the lead is, and yet how significant his kind of story is, and how much it matters. Because no matter what, the great thing about him is he doesn't stop. He just doesn't stop.
He's
relentless, and it's one of these awful things about nowadays, which is that it's a kind of dark farce, because so many of these YouTubers that we see nowadays, I mean, there are so many that I can mention, it doesn't really matter what they're doing, but we seem to keep going back and watching them because they just won't stop doing it.
It's obviously
weird because it blends into everything. It blends into the world at large, the madness that is the world today. Like, people don't think about what they're doing and they just go ahead and do it, and we just sort of watch. So it's this weird kind of... it's this kind of comedy that turns the real world into a sort of farce, really. And I thought, man, that's cool. Like, that's sexy. That's funny. That's ridiculous. That's ugly. Do you know what I mean? It's really ugly, but it's really funny.
Yeah.
Because it just goes to show how easily we can all lose our minds. You know what I mean? It doesn't take much.
I couldn't agree more. So how was it on your part, Owen, when you kind of were looking for the lead? Because... again, it's a weird one, because Ben isn't the most lovable of characters. He's a bit of a Wally. But as you said, he's relentless and he's constant. And Eugene has got the relentlessness and the constant. He's not a Wally. He's lovely. He's wonderful. But there's that drive. So was it kind of seeing that and going, right, he can tune that into this area of the character and bring... not the worst out, because he's a lovable Wally. The character, again, not Eugene. He's not a Wally. So how was that to kind of find that and go, so where are we going to... how can this tweak and work?
You know, it was hard because, yes, one of the main themes of the film is how far are people willing to go today to get noticed and to get followers and everything, and which is really something of our time, I think. Yes. And we really wanted to have a anti-hero a kind of, you know, one of the inspirations were Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
the main character in Kick-Ass, from Mark Miller, and which I love because I love that first scene when he, you know, he gets his outfit, gets outside, tries to help a girl, and then gets stabbed right away.
Yeah.
I love that because that's what happens in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
And completely. So we really wanted to have an anti-hero and a character. This was pretty risky, actually, from the start to write the character this way because we knew the character wasn't going to be a very nice person.
Mm.
He has lots of flaws. The character, not Eugene.
our poor audience are going to have to be like, how many times are they going to say it? We get it.
But having said that, we needed to find an actor that would manage to bring something, the likable thing about the character, and keeping, you know, everything we wrote. So that's really one of the things that I was looking for, and that's something Eugene gave right away, because right away when you see Eugene on screen, he's a very likable person.
Yeah,
he has that, you know, that charisma and everything. And so that worked. And then Eugene, by the way he played the character, I think also brought something that really was going well with the way we wrote it. He made him an actual human being that evolves through the film.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the film, you know, not spoiling everything, but he's evolving. You know, he's probably not the best human being ever.
Yeah.
But
I think Ben's kind of moral for the world is his kind of punch, his sort of motto would be maximum effort, maximum me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so that's the weird thing about him. It's like maximum effort. Oh, that's good. We like that. And people who make an effort, that's good. But it's the me that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's who he is that's the problem.
Well, that was exactly it. He strikes me as a character that his absolute priority is himself and his own preservation, but his next priority, literally next on the list, is everyone else and being liked and being nice and being friendly, being polite, all those kind of things. So it's like, it's a shame about the number one, but the number two is a great number two to have.
But it's always funny when you see those people who truly believe that they're in the world for other people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I'm
not doing this for you, for me. I'm doing this for you through me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm not sure at which point you're messed up, but thanks for trying.
Yeah.
You know?
So one of the beautiful things on this is the perception from the outside of films is that they're always this big, huge, throwing money everywhere type thing. And this film felt like the perfect balance between passion project and professionalism. It can't be just a knocked up, unprofessional, we all had some time, let's make a film. It has to be a polished, slick, it has to look like millions and millions and millions has been thrown at it. But to get it there, it took everyone just kind of, everyone pulling in the same direction. And that was a beautiful thing. So how did you find that, Owen, to first of all put that together, that we're going to have everyone... Because it's a similar thing, like you were saying, budget-wise, it's easier if you've got a story that takes place in one house.
Totally.
Similarly, if it's all taking place in one house, it's handy if we're all in one hotel up the road, and it's, you know what I mean, it becomes the reality of itself. Yeah. For the story, you're putting everyone together, but then for the reality of it, you're bringing us all together and trying to make everyone just pull in the right direction. So how was that to put together and get the team?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I really got lucky, and thanks to Manuel Puro, the casting director, that brought all you together. I really got lucky with the cast I had. I mean, really, everybody on the film was great, and I'm not saying that just because it's my film. they really are. I mean, great actors, great actresses, and it was such a teamwork, you know. I could feel right away when we met in London before the shoot to do some reads, and everybody was bringing something to the table, you know, and I don't have any ego about that, about the writing, and, you know, if someone brings on a good idea, we just put it in the film. You know, if it makes the film better, why not?
Yeah. And it's ideal as well because, as you said, if you cast it right, then you don't mind taking ideas on board from people.
Totally.
When I had Jimmy Iovine on the podcast, he said the key to his kind of his change in careers, all different things he's done, he said, is casting your life correctly. If Dr. Dre says to him, I'm not sure if that's a good idea, he'll go, all right, well, let's discuss that. He's not going to go, fuck you. He's put the right people around him. And that's what it felt like on this. I mean, from my angle, still now, I'm very new to all of this, but the amount I learned from Simone, from Ashley, from Gretchen, from Bronson, obviously from Eugene and you guys, I felt it was a learning, like every day was class. Like the time that we're waiting around to be on set, I'm learning loads. I'm doing a workshop here, and then we're going and doing the main job. And that just felt great that it was, everyone in it together. So on your part, Eugene, how was that for you? Because I'm aware as well, there's a slight difference when you're the guy who's at the front, because there's more pressure on you. It's fine for all of us. We're all working together. It's all a bit of fun. You're the guy that's at the front and in far more of the scenes and things like that. So how was that on your part, to lead the team and be part of the team as such?
Yeah, I think it's a weird position that you've got to take kind of mentally, is that you've sort of got that you've got to take the position that even though, you know, on paper you're the leading part of it, you are also kind of, you know, you're a, what's the right way of saying it? You're not a backseat driver, but you are driving the film, but you're not the only thing driving the film. It's hard to imagine someone driving a car that's got three steering wheels, because you know and I think it's kind of accepting the fact that you've got your own steering wheel to take care of. And obviously if you see there's something that you want to raise with the director, or if there's something that you think is kind of working that isn't you think there's something that's working that can continue forward into the film, then you bring it to the table. So I think really a lot of what it's about is trying to take the position of it's not putting yourself on a throne, really. You've got to kind of sit on your little wooden stool. The fact that it's at the front of the class doesn't really matter. You've just got to sit on your little wooden stool, and you've got to kind of come up with the best ideas that you can, really.
Yeah.
And so, that's sort of it, really. Maybe there's a part of it that you have to sort of, you have, not forget, but you've got to sort of, you've got to not see being the lead as being the sort of... The nucleus around which everything functions.
Yeah.
Whether it is or not, whatever is the center of the film isn't really relevant, because no matter what, all of us are working in unison. The nucleus is what all of us make as we put it.
Yeah.
It's the united amount of what we all put in together. It's the greater part that, what's the phrase I'm looking for? It's the
sum is greater than is greater than the sum of the parts.
Exactly, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's just willing to be open and just try to contribute. I remember when we would do, when what was the scene? Oh yeah, no, sorry. There's a scene with Ashley. What's Ashley's second name? I always forget it. He's such a nice actor.
I know him as Bashy.
Yeah, I know him as Bashy. Yeah, because we all know them on their Instagram or social media.
Ashley Thomas.
Yeah, exactly.
Ashley Thomas.
Oh, I love at Bashy. Yeah. But anyway, Ashley, who plays charming Ben Like in the film, which is incidentally for our audiences, that's the way you know the difference between each Ben Like is they have like an adjective that describes them.
Yeah.
So charming Ben Like, played by Ashley, there's a scene where something very dramatic and very violent is going on, but just out of absolutely nowhere, I feel like I don't know if it ended up in one of the tapes, but I ended up having, oh God, this sounds so weird, but I will say it, it's that we're having a bit of a conflict, and I ended up in one of the takes going, oh my God, I'm really angry with this guy. I'm going to spit on him. And it's so it sounds so stupid, because to say that on air, it's like, brilliant. Eugene, what situation required that kind of response? But the thing is that in the moment, I was like, this is take three. I've done it two ways before. This is how I'm going to do this, and this makes sense because he's really pissed me off. And we tried it, and I remember when we said cut, the cameraman and Ashley just both burst into laughter, and I was like, Owen just said cut, and I was like, I can't believe I just did that. But it just happened, and I thought, that's kind of the thing. It's just letting the positive stuff that you've got to contribute happen, and realising that's all you've got.
And again, I really think if it feels like a family on set, then you feel comfortable with doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And the setting that Irwin had set up there allowed it to feel like that. But I remember that scene clearly, and just pissing myself as soon as it
happened.
Because we're all sitting around. And
so
Ashley
stupid.
Was in both of them. There was also a scene that was upstairs in the big house when he was saying goodnight.
Yes.
I was literally, because I'm neutral to these things, whenever I'm not in the way, I like to try and watch on monitors and just try and take things in. And I was like, had to literally hold my mouth closed to stop laughing. his improvisation on his third or fourth take just had us all like, where did that come from?
It's amazing. Love that. I love that scene. And, you know, that was really funny because that's a great scene, I think. And after the scene, Ashley came up to me and he told me, man, I got to do more comedy. I love comedy.
It's amazing. So
we were heartbroken because that was his last day. We had to say goodbye to him. We're like, oh, yes, man, don't go, man.
It was.
That was, a big ending, a big goodbye. So, I mean, we talked of the... again, it's beautiful as an industry in general. The thing I've fallen in love with is how much, as you said, it's so much is out of your control. Even if you're the lead, there's so much around you going on that you can't drive it.
Yeah.
You can't drive it because there's too many other things pulling in directions. But one of the beautiful things that developed over the shoot for me was Eugene becoming our leader off screen because of the hotel that we were staying in. So we were staying in a small place called Mello in France, and there was one hotel in the whole town and there were hardly any shops. So Daniel, who ran the hotel, was truly in charge of our diets, of everything. Daniel. Like, we were literally at his mercy. He'd be like, dinner is at 8. We're like, oh, dinner's from 8. Like, no, dinner is at 8.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay, it's not from, it's like, no, here's when it is.
There's a part of me that's hoping on some weird alternate universe that Daniel's listening to this, in which case I feel like I have to say, nous te manquons, we miss you, Daniel. We miss you so much.
He was amazing, but it was a beautiful thing, because at first, I remember the first two nights me and Bronson ate together, because we'd got the Eurostar across together, not knowing that we're both in this film, sat next to each other, not talking,
and
then got in a car together and went, all right. Hello, mate.
I didn't know that.
So we kind of buddied up from that first thing, and we ate together the first two nights, and we were like, this guy's just, he's rude, this and that. And then the first night that Eugene was there and could speak to him in his native tongue, Daniel was the best person I met on the whole thing.
Oh my God.
He had such character, he was lovely, he was warm. It was only because we were the ignorant Brits there being like, well, what's the options? We were the ignorant Brits that we'd painted this character of this evil French hotel owner who was feeding us whatever we wanted. As soon as Eugene was there, so every night me and Bronson would be like, do you want to go and eat? You're like, have you seen if Eugene's back here? Has Eugene wrapped yet? We're just going to wait until Eugene's here. We'd all just follow Eugene down as our leader, and you'd be able to discuss.
So funny coming back, though, because very delicately, very slowly, as that relationship developed, I realised what was happening, and I knew I knew, like, okay, cool, man. Like, I'm down. I dig it. Like, I want to have fun. Are we, like, no, let's do it. So Daniel would come to me, and after a period of time, like if we would be half an hour late or something, he would come up to me, and in French, he would go, listen, Eugene, I've got to ask you something. I'm like, Daniel, you don't seem to get it. I'm not the boss. But so it ended up being this kind of, I had so many conversations with him that had no reason and no conclusion, but he still came to me wanting to ask for my help. But it was, and I loved it though, because I found that once we all got back home and we were starving, and you use so much energy when you're on set. So actually, quickly, I would say that's one of the friggin' awesome things about this film was that we ate so well. Yeah. Like, I know that's a really random thing to say, but man, anyone listening to this, if you're doing a film, don't get bad food. I know it sounds stupid, but just like, go to Lyon, like, just get something that you know everyone likes, because literally, Napoleon was right, like, an army marches on its stomach, and if you feed someone good food, you're gonna... That you genuinely act better. Yeah. It sounds mental, but you really do. Anyway, so we came back and we were all starving, and I would end up kind of having to be sort of sous chef in the kitchen. But it was fun. I loved
it. You'd probably be negotiator. We'd tell Eugene our demands beforehand.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd go off to Daniel and he'd come back and go, here's what we've agreed.
I don't know the French word for skewer, but I'll make it up, you know?
And as soon as Eugene would walk into the restaurant, Daniel would bring some free bottles of wine and champagne.
Yeah. And he kept taking us out to the bar. He would take us out and be like, Eugène, viens avec moi. I'd be like, where are we going? He wouldn't tell us where. There was a great time where Daniel took us for a drink, put us in the car, but didn't tell us where we're going. So we were all just like, where the hell are we going? We're in this small village. Like, there's nothing around. He drove us about 400 meters down the road, poured us cognac, and was just like, yeah. Like, come on in. And he's hilarious.
I wasn't there, but I've heard the story of Daniel taking Martin Ford, one of the, who was in the cast too.
Yeah.
And because he wanted to get to the gym, And Daniel told him, yeah, I know Jim. And he just followed him. I don't know where he took him.
Amazing. But... I love it. But again, as silly as it all sounds, I genuinely think it ended up influencing what we got on screen because we were all unified by Eugene's fluidity with language. It meant we all ate together. And I think on films, it can be really easy to get into that mode of, I'm going to eat in my room, I've got my script to go over, I've got this and that. And we still had time for that, but it meant every night there was at least five or six of us eating together and discussing the day. And I think that helps when the film is about a load of people trapped in a house together. It meant that we all had that comfort. And it meant that on set, like there was numerous times that Bronson would feel comfortable to just ad-lib a bit or go off in a direction, which maybe you wouldn't if we've been in our hotel rooms every night getting room service and keeping ourselves to ourselves.
It takes time. Like, I think if you've got seven actors who all get on very well, but they meet that same day, they can have really good chemistry very quickly. But there's something just about how, with the need for time to unfold so they can develop their interpersonal relations with another, so that all of the reactions and the cues, ad-libbing and prompting are all really sound. So I think that's kind of the thing that I think that's kind of one of the things that it's also the same, not even just for comedy, but it's just generally for any job that you're doing. But I think that was kind of like, we were all together and I think everyone wants to kind of, on some level, if they really care about the project, get hug a mug, you know, and get kind of involved, you know, and get really stuck in kind of with one another, because that's really where all the magic happens. So I think that's kind of, I think that's what makes a good film sexy, is that people have all really gotten close, and they've all got kind of into one another's, like, you know, what's the right way of saying it? I guess kind of just, they make friends and they're not in each other's... They make friends. They make friends and they're not in each other's personal lives, but they're close, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a beautiful thing, because, again, another thing was, in this small town of Mellow, there was fuck all to do. Yeah. So it meant that we would all sit and hang out and would catch up. On one of the days, I went for a walk and I was recording a little Ask Pip episode of the podcast where people have submitted questions. And Adam jogged past me. So Adam was then on the podcast. And we had a chat. And we had a little back and forth about how the film was going and things like that. It was that kind of intimacy. I think it helps. It brings something into a film where, again, you're relying on the people on screen, because there's not this huge budget. There's not all these other things that can be done. But kind of speaking on that, Erwan, when there's kind of, particularly when it's your first feature, and you've planned it a lot around keeping the budget in order and making it work. The best laid plans of mice and men, you also have to kind of be able to change things on the fly. And one of the ways that happened was really early on, because of an allergic reaction that Eugene had to adopt. And again, it's, you know, it's such
forgot,
a silly,
forgot,
small
no,
personal story,
about
but
that.
It
no,
really
no.
shows how we had to adapt things. Because
totally.
Eugene, on one, I think you'd shot the London bits, and in between summer, you'd had an allergic reaction. It made your eye
an allergic reaction, which has never happened in my life, I should add. It just completely happened out of nowhere.
Thanks to your mum's dog, right?
Yeah, man. Let's not talk about Noggin, okay? Noggin, man. Noggin the Dachshund. You don't deserve to be spoken about.
He's not getting pushed. But it meant that you had to go, right, well, the scene that we were going to do, we will probably get better tomorrow, because we've got these restrictions. So what can we move around, and what can we?
Yeah, we had to obviously move things around, and we also had to. To have a scene where
Of course you added a scene.
Yes.
Course,
well, we didn't add a scene, but we changed it in a way that Simon was supposed to hit Eugene at some point, but she wasn't supposed to hit him that hard. So we had her hitting him really hard with a bottle this time. Brilliant. So that for the whole film Eugene would have a black eye.
Yeah.
Because that was the only way that we could, you know, justify that his character would have a black eye the whole film.
Yeah.
I feel I should mention at this point, I had an allergic reaction in my right eye to my left eye to my a dog, which has never happened before, but yeah. it chose to happen during filming. So I tucked the dog and I accidentally just scratched my eye. And then on the Eurostar back to France, my face, I had a golf ball behind my eye, basically. I just looked ridiculous. And yeah, so we had to change things around so that I looked like I had a wound. And it's slightly. I really don't think it's noticeable at all, but it was. It was a nuisance.
Well, when we picked up Eugene at the train in Paris, we're like, did you get into a fight in London? Or what happened?
Yeah, mate, I thought it'd be good for character.
Yeah.
What happened?
I love that, but I love that it was then adapted and made part of it, that you then had to have makeup every day to have your black eye put on.
Again, one of the things that you can't predict, yeah. You just can't predict it.
But yeah, it's one of the things on this small budget independent films, you need to be adaptive. You need to accept that the budget is what it is. So and we had to change a few things. Like we had a fight who was longer than we actually shot it.
Yep.
But we didn't have time to shoot it properly. So we just made it shorter. You know, I'd rather have it shorter and believable and good than trying to have like a long fight that doesn't look good you really need to be adaptive.
The night I had my big stunt. It was raining. Tipping with rain, and it couldn't. Well, it was kind of hard to make it work.
And I will say this: you make your own stunt.
Yes,
Eugene does stunt. Too. You know, when Eugene has to spit on someone, he does it. He doesn't have.
We don't hire the double for that.
Yeah. And you do that too.
It was genuinely a highlight because I was like, in the morning, I didn't particularly know what was happening. And then, but it was afternoon of practicing this thing. But then when we went to do it, it was raining outside. So we had limits on that. So it was another one where the reason the Eugene thing came to mind with the allergic reaction was having that quite early on, did that give you some confidence? Because you've had something go wrong. We've had something go wrong. We've adapted. We've made it work. We've made the most, like, we've made it into something. Not only have we adapted, we've made it a thing. He's going to have a black eye now. That's, you know, we've made that work. So was that a good thing to have early on in that part of the shoot? Because it's like, right, we're going to make it work.
Yeah,
you can't stop us.
Of course. And again, you know, it's funny because coming from digital series and YouTube videos before I did some TV things, I mean, you know, when you've done YouTube skits videos, funny videos with nothing, once you have a little bit of material and a crew, everything seems possible, you know?
Yeah.
So you just learn to adapt, you know? So, I mean, I've done like some shoots for YouTube videos in the street. The street was empty at first, and then the street was full, and you just adapt. And that happened in London on that film too. You know, we had remember that scene we shot in London. So we arrive really early morning, you know, with Eugene and this scene with Dimitri. Dimitri Leonidis, and so we arrive in the morning in this really quiet little street of London, all right?
Yes.
So it's like, I don't know, maybe 7 in the morning. It's empty. So we're like, all right, we can shoot the scene, you know? So I go and get Eugene and Dimitri, who were at the pub right across the street, and we say, all right, we need to shoot it. And drinking coffee. And so we start shooting the scene. As soon as we start shooting it, some guy starts repairing his car.
Wow.
You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're like, well, we have to shoot it because, you know, we only have the day to shoot the scenes, and that's not the only thing, the only scene we have to shoot.
Yeah.
So we were like, we have to shoot anyways. Then some people start moving out from their apartment in that street.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what is this?
Yeah,
and then, I'm not lying, remember?
Yeah,
cops then came then on the horses.
On the horseback.
Oh, wow.
So there were two patrolling horseback like cops, and we were just like...
So, I mean, you just need to adapt. Anything can happen on a set, and you just need to adapt.
And I think that the funny thing is that even though whatever budget film you're doing... If you still have the highest budget at your disposal and you've used it to the best possible degree, the most insane things can happen. Like things can just completely, literally, just blow you off course. I remember once on Game of Thrones, actually, when we were doing season 2, there was a bit with the Night's Watch where they had an entire scaffolding attached to the side of a rocky cliff that was supposed to be for some Greyjoy stuff, and the wind just came across and literally blew the entire scaffolding into the ocean. So they had to completely reshoot. So that happens.
How do we deal with this?
It just happens on everything. It's so unpredictable. I think from that position, you've got to just go with the fact that you're here now, you're lucky, just do what you can do best, you know?
Let's make it work. Let's talk a little bit more about a location, because as Eugene said, I read the script and it had that. I think Guy Ritchie's a good comparison there because of the cuttiness and the sharpness of the dialogue and stuff like that. And then I got to see the main location that we're shooting in, and it felt more kind of Wes Anderson, a subtler Tim Burton kind of. It had such a rich, great vibe to it. So how was that to kind of get stuff that people wouldn't, or get stuff out of the script that we maybe would not have seen, but you would have seen? You knew this is how it was going to look. We didn't. All we knew was, here's the characters, here's the dialogue. You get to go, look, here's the world I'm building. And it was this beautiful, just old manor house type thing in France.
And thank you, because that's really one of the main inspirations. I love Wes Anderson. And to me, one of my obsessions is first getting a good story that really keep people's attention. And good comedy, but also I really need the film to look good. You know, I'm really obsessed with. I think it's cinema, so it should look good. You know, it's not real life. I don't like the naturalistic cinema so much. I like it when, you know, I love Wes Anderson and Tim Burton for that, because I just love the way their films look like. And so when we first visited the house with my co-producers and my set designer, I knew exactly, you know, I had mood boards and everything, and I knew exactly what I was looking for. But the house looked pretty shitty when we first visited it. And so I was like, this is perfect. And my co-producers were like, are you crazy? Are you fucking crazy? This is not perfect. This is like, you know, the house is cold, it's shitty, it looks like nothing. Like, yeah, but we're going to redo everything. And my set designer was like, yeah, it's perfect. And so, because, you know, we've talked about it so much and we knew exactly, like, my inspirations were also from Mark Miller's comics.
Yeah.
And I knew what kind of visuals I wanted, what kind of colors I wanted. And so we just, you know, we went into every room and I was like, yeah, this, the ceiling is going to be this color, the walls are going to be this color. I knew everything the way I wanted it to be. And so my co-producers were kind enough to trust me. And we, you know, the set designer worked on it with his team for a few weeks. And then you guys came in, and I have to say, I was so pleased to see you guys' reaction, because, I think the set looked good. You know, you could tell right from the set that the film was going to look good. And the DOP, François-Xavier Lorès, did a great job too. But to me, the image is really the collaboration of the set designer and the DOP. It's really a teamwork. You know?
The amazing thing about it are the colors, as Erwan mentioned, that he uses, because the background in the chateau that we were filming in has got these lovely, very kind of strong, they got, the color scheme reminds me of looking at a, very fittingly, like a Cluedo board.
Yeah.
These lovely dark, but do you know what I mean?
Like, really, that's perfect.
It's a perfect fitting style. And so I looked and I was like, there's something very sexy about it, but there's also something dark and very, I don't actually know what the right word is to describe it, but it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
It fits perfectly for the genre of film.
I lucked out as well, because I got to shoot my best ever self-tape there, because I got an audition for the What We Do in the Shadows series.
Oh, great.
Which is the perfect look and location.
Yeah, it is.
Sir James, who was amazing at self-tapes, was like, I'll help you. So me and James, just when we weren't shooting, went round in different rooms and we were like, is it all right? We just go in this room for a bit. We won't get in. So we were just
looking
around.
Red looks better than the purple.
Yeah. We were literally just going from room to room to see what I've seen. It was like, I didn't get the role, but I had so much fun, because it looked like, it was like, they must have watched that and thought, this guy's really gone all out on this audition. He's like, he's literally gone to like an abandoned mansion. And I was like,
all the producers going, I love it when actors make an effort.
He's built the locations.
I'm currently in France. I've come all the way here to do the self-tape.
It was so perfect. Well, I mean, this is a good point as well. As you mentioned, it's cinema. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of release it's having, because I'll put more details in the intro, but it's getting a cinema release, but is it Our Screens? Is that the name of it?
Yes.
It's basically, it's an amazing thing. A film always talk about our door on here called Super Bob had a similar release where it's basically there's a load of places available, and if they exceed a set amount of tickets, then the screening will happen. And that's just exciting. There will be a load of them will have Q&As. I'm going to be involved in some. Eugene will be involved. As many as people as we can will be involved in making these exciting things, because films are meant to be watched in the cinema, and I'm a massive believer in that. Even if you've got an amazing setup at home, you'll be glancing at your phone, or you'll be noticing that the living room's untidy or whatever. There's a reason that cinemas get rid of every bit of light other than emergency exits and stuff like that, because it draws you in. And I think that's the key place. I know the way people watch films is changing massively, but I think anything you can do to get people to watch on that big screen is massive, right?
I totally agree. And it's I mean, obviously, I as a director, I love going to see a film in the cinema. But it's I'm so happy that some people are going to be able to see this film in cinemas, mainly because of exactly what you're talking about the attention. Because it's so hard when you're at home, even if you have the perfect installation, the perfect you know, way to watch it, you're still going to be on your phone, you're still going to be answering emails, and that just kills the pleasure of watching a film to me. You know, you should be just focused for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, and just watch the film and be inside it, you know. And that's really why I'm one of the reasons why I'm really happy that we're going to have a release in cinemas. Yes.
Yeah, completely. It's exciting. Well, I want to kind of talk about, again, we've touched upon the ensemble, and it's a tough one because we can't discuss everyone. Bruce was one of my favourites because we had a scene that we shared that was quite grim and unpleasant, but he was amazing. Martin, as you mentioned, Martin Ford is a monster of a man. I love following him on Instagram still. Yeah. It was amazing to have him there. Dimitri was someone that, when I first got to watch a screening of the film, he was a show stealer for me because I wasn't in any scenes with him. So I'd only met him at the read-through.
Oh,
and he's hilarious in it. So that was kind of a big reveal for me. But someone we need to mention is Andrew.
Yes.
Because obviously we've lost one of our Ben Likes since the shooting in real life. Sorry, it's blurred lines of murder mystery here. But in real life, Andrew Hall was amazing to have in there. He was someone to learn a load from because he's been doing this a long time.
Oh, yeah.
He was constantly charming. He felt effortless as a character. Like it felt like when you got Andrew through on the casting, you must have gone, well, there you go. Literally the person I'm looking for. This is easiest casting I've ever done.
Yeah, it was really easy casting. I mean, it was him. And he was an amazing actor, amazing human being. I mean, it's as you said, it's one of those people, when you meet him, you learn a lot from him, you know, from it's not just professionally. I don't know. He was just a really nice human being.
It was lovely. I said, for the majority of my experience that I remember isn't the stuff on camera. It was the stuff in that little room where we're all sitting together and
giggling.
I know that someone's got that seat because their phone charger is there. And
we
earned our little positions in this set room.
Exactly.
It was wonderful and, you know, exciting to then transfer that onto screen and have that energy amongst the characters, because it's an energy. I think energy is key in a murder mystery because there should be that tension and there should be that unspoken kind of those feelings. So
and because, you know, it's that's why I spent so much time casting with Manuel, because I knew I really needed to get the best actors and actresses that I could get, because it's mainly 8 people in a room together, 2/3 of the film. So if you don't get the right actors and actresses, then there's no film, you know. I mean, you can't hide behind heavy action stuff. You can't hide behind special effects. You really need the best cast you can ask for.
Yeah. What was it about me that made you think I would fit hipster Ben Lyon? mean, that was one of my favourite auditions to go through. I was like, well, there you go. This is wonderful.
What was your reaction?
It just cracked me up because it's testament to how much I love the script. Because again, getting anything through that's hipster, I'm going to be like, look, I don't want to be typecast. So I got it sent through and I was like, I don't know. And then I read the script. I was like, this is great. This is a great role. So yeah.
I loved the laid back energy that you had.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, right from the audition, you walked into the room and you have that energy that I really liked, you know, with the good sense of humor and I don't know, it's, I just liked the energy you had.
I love it. One of my favorite stories that is from my acting career so far is from Ben Light.
Really?
that on the first scene where all of us were together, I was like, I'm a laid-back guy. I'm going to have my arms on the back of the sofa. Yeah. I wasn't experienced enough to know if you're doing a filming all day thing, you don't cross your legs, you don't just...
No.
My arms, that night, I could barely move because I'd had to spend hours just with my arms in this unnatural position trying to look relaxed.
Yeah.
And every time we're shooting, and Bashy, Ashley Thomas, was as soon as I started doing it, was like, after the second episode, like, your arms are hurting, isn't it? I'm like, fucking yeah. He's like, yeah. I don't even cross my legs now because you'd be amazed how heavy your leg becomes on your own leg.
That was the worst day to do that.
Yeah, because it was when we had to get all of that in and I'm just...
Because we had, that was one of the days where we had all eight Ben Likes in the same room and we had two cameras that day. I mean, that was the worst day to do.
So if anything,
sorry about that.
So if anything, I want to urge anyone listening to make sure you go and watch in the cinema because of the pain I went through for the art of that scene, what I put my body through for that moment.
And again, you do your own stunts.
Yes, I do my own stunts. I didn't have an
what
arm
looks like
double.
A casual sit down is in fact an enormous amount of energy.
It's so stupid that the point of it was to be relaxed, and it was the most unrelaxing thing in the world. So we've talked about the kind of the making of it all, and I think it comes across how much we've enjoyed it. I was pleased to do this podcast, but I've made a note at the top to say, I've got to try and remember to be a host because I'm just excited to catch up with you guys. It's that kind of thing.
It's so nice to see you.
I need to try and lead this, but it can't just be a, so you're all right. What have you been up to? There's a quote I meant that came up on when I had Kano on the podcast, and we talk about Ashley Thomas in that, in fact, because they're good mates and we're in Top Boy together. But there's a film called The Battle of Algiers, and there's a quote in that. It's the true story of that battle, and a lot of the cast were involved in it because it was only shot a few years after the revolution itself. But there's a quote in that that I think comes to mind here, and it's that to start a revolution is hard, to win one harder still, but it's only once we've won that the true struggle begins. Mm. That feels like a real epitome of independent film because it is fucking hard to get it going. It's hard to make it, but once it's done and we've all gone home, or you not so much because you've been part of the kind of the festivals and stuff like that, but we all go home and go, oh, that was fun, and then it's on Irwin to, number one, turn it into a film, and number two, get any fucker to watch it, to get it in cinemas, to get it distributed. I did some posts about it and I was fielding questions for the last year of, oh, when's it going to be available? It's like, it's not as easy as that, man.
Yeah.
If we could just make it available, it would be available. But it's been a battle on your side.
Right. Yeah. It's a whole battle to get the film financed. Then you go to war. You need to shoot it because we shot the whole film in 3 weeks. So that was quite an exercise. But you're totally right. Well, once you've done it, you know, the film is finished, you start sending it to festivals and, you know, you're hoping back in your apartment in Paris that some festivals are going to select it.
Yeah.
I would have never thought we would have 40 festival selections around the world. We won like 17 awards with them. I mean, it was just crazy. And the reviews we have had so far are really good. So, I mean, it's amazing. But I didn't think that another war was starting.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. It's I mean, these are great times. You know, we've never had so much good content out there to watch, TV series, films, but at the same time, it's getting harder to get the people to watch your project.
Yeah.
So that's why we really needed those festivals, and we really needed the buzz around the film to get you know, as much attention as we can get. And I'm really happy that thanks to that, we found distribution, in theaters in the US and in the UK.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's again, it's great to be, to know that some people are going to be able to experience this film in a cinema.
Yeah.
And it's better to get more press. So it's better for the film to get noticed.
I mean, that's a key thing that people don't realize as well. Cause people often say, well, just sling it up on iTunes or Sky or Netflix.
Nope.
that's number one. Again, we've talked about the difference of watching this cinema, but number two, for just a release in general, it's, you can get so much more press and coverage if you're having an actual release than if it's just lost in the back catalog of Netflix, particularly on Netflix. I adore Netflix, but there's so much on there. I've looked at a film and gone, oh, I don't really want to watch a 2-hour film, and then spent 2 hours scrolling through what I might want to watch and not watched anything. It's like, all right, I won't watch anything. I'll scroll through Netflix for a day. So there is a key there in getting it out properly and getting it, again, it's mad. Again, I'd proudly share each time we'd have a new graphic that's saying we've won another award. But then again, people would generally think, well, if you're winning awards, surely you can just put it in the cinema. It's like,
No,
it's not that simple. Yeah, so how was that on your part, Eugene? Because to have seen it and know that it's fucking worked, it's good. like what Owen set out to do and what you guys had a vision, it's come together and it works. Yet, how do we get people to actually see this thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I knew that social media was such an important part of getting it out there, as it is in almost everything nowadays. But a lot of the time, as you say, you're not sure what you're getting out there because you've done the film.
Yeah.
What if you're lucky to have seen it before it goes to start doing any festivals and stuff like that, then that's great. But typically what happens as the actor is that you'll get a snippet of it if you're doing ADR. Yeah. So you'll go in and do additional dialogue recording to clarify some bit of, you know, a microphone blip or, you know, whatever, just a bit of additional dialogue. So you'll see a snippet and you'll get an essence of it, but you still won't see the finished piece. So you're very much kind of, you know, you have to have complete faith that what is being done with the film is going to be something you're just as excited, you know, and that excitement is actually very useful because it gives you the energy to keep pushing it forward. And to check in with the director as regularly as possible is not uncommon, you know, because you're an actor who's still auditioning or doing other bits and bobs if you're so lucky. But, you know, and then every month or two, you want to check in with the director and say, how are things going? What's going on? But it's also kind of its own little, it's its own organism that's got its own kind of direction once you as the actor have ceased to work on the job. And it's completely, it's being driven by producers, directors and production and networks and whoever's behind it. But it's very, very much doing its own thing. And there's a part of the mentality for the actor that goes, let it, leave it, do its thing, and check back in with it in a month just to let it kind of do its thing and see what happens with it. But I was very interested in it, and I every time I saw these visuals, I was so excited for it because it just looked so funny and so goofy and so colourful. So I was very excited in the build-up to it. I found it really, really... it gave me a kick. Like whenever we got like YouTube clips put up, I'd be like, right, everyone, here it is. Like, check this out.
Yeah.
I love that phase, you know, especially if you walk away from something that you've really enjoyed. It's a pleasurable experience. It's an exciting experience.
I love that. I think you're completely right because again, there's so much that you continue to learn, even though you're part of it as stuff comes out. So even when we had that first cast screening I met your mum there, I think, and you know, there was some friends and family there as well. Even as the credits started, I was like, oh, I didn't know the credits were going to look like this.
And they look cool
and it's really good. It's like, oh, this is exciting. Even that, it's like, because what you saw on the page, you then learnt more when you saw the set and you then learnt more when you met all of the cast and then you learn even more when it's all put together and edited and looks all slick.
So yeah, exactly.
It's that wonderful, exciting journey, I guess. And so how was that to kind of, I'll start to wrap things up as we're at the hour mark, but I kind of just want to know, how was it to go and do kind of the festivals and that? Because again, as you say, the weird thing of an actor is you do a project, then you move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And then you have to come back. I get it on press junkets all the time.
Yeah,
it's like,
sure.
So you talk to people and you realise, you wrapped this 2 years ago on some things. It's like, and you have to be, this. How is that on your part?
It's wonderful, because what is so interesting about doing all the festivals is that you learn from the people who you talk to what it is that they really want.
Yeah.
So when they see a film, if it's an interviewer, they're very interested. I love the action, like all these guns and all these explosions, and Martin Ford is in it, like the bear of a man that I've seen in, that I've seen before in another project. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so they ask about that, the action element of it. But then there are some who have a more kind of, they're all intrigued going, so what is it that you're trying to say about the reality of YouTube TV stars? And you kind of go, man, like, right. I guess I'm trying to say they're really messed up, you know? Yeah. Like, and the whole sort of journey of becoming a YouTube star is one that's fraught with peculiarity and eccentricity.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what I liked about it, is how different people are, is what different people are looking for. And obviously, if depending on what jobs you've done before, they ask, they may, like for me, they would ask me questions like, you know, going from Thrones to this, like, what's that like? And you kind of sort of, you get asked those questions and you do sort of have to think to yourself, wow, like, kind of what is it like, really? I guess it's just a lovely freeing experience.
Yeah.
So I find them really fun. I find them really, really engaging. And I always find that you've got more to say, or maybe this is just me, but there's always something more that you hadn't realised you could talk about than you thought.
Yeah, it's always exciting to learn the right question can unlock loads of different memories and things like that. Exactly. That's always exciting. So I mean, I'll start with Yuji then. Ben, like aside, what's ahead? I know that when we were making it, you'd recently been doing a film that I think you produced on. Mm. I know you'd had a huge involvement in LA about a car share guy who's deaf. If I
That's
remember,
right. Yeah, yeah.
And that was something that you were hugely excited about and passionate about. And the visuals that you were able to share look beautiful. So kind of, what's ahead? What projects that you can talk about?
Of course. Well, since Ben Like, there have been four. There's been Resonance, which is the film you're talking about, which is a nice little Vimeo movie. It's called Resonance. It's about 30 minutes, about a young deaf Uber driver, and I played the Uber driver. And it's a really, really gorgeous, sweet little film set in LA. There's another film. There's two little shorts. Another one called Mensana, which is a sci-fi film about a woman who loses her grip on reality. And then I did a play. But the things that are out right now are The Lodgers, that is, I've been talking about it for a while, but is also cast by Manuel Puro, is still on Netflix, which you can watch right now. Just type in The Lodgers to the search bar. I've just finished a sci-fi film that I actually was filming for the day before yesterday, just doing some pickups on, which I can't talk about yet, even though I think it's up on IMDb, but they haven't yet told me. But I heard that like on Friday night. So I was like, oh, really? Like, we can talk about this now. And they're like, no, not yet. I'm like, okay, well, you know, mum's the word. So that's coming up soon. And then another thing is I did a First World War film called Love Have I Known, which is doing festivals around town right now. And when it has the chance to get released on other platforms, I'm going to scream it from the mountaintops.
Exciting.
And so it's all pretty active at the moment.
I love that. Nice. It's such an interesting thing in the film industry. I was discussing this with Brett Goldstein recently, who's an actor and comedian and writer, and he's got a series being made by I think AMC in America at the moment, and he Instagrammed something from on set and got told off and had to take it down. And we were saying what the goal of every actor or producer or writer should be, to get to the point where you don't get told off for that. Because I guarantee The Rock doesn't get told off when he's or Kevin Hart doesn't get told off Instagram for sex. Like, where is that level? I don't think Samuel L. Jackson would get told off, but there is going to be a point. There's going to be a point where you would still get told off if you're Instagramming. So that's,
can you imagine that? They get paid. I made it. No one's telling me off anymore. Yeah.
They're actually paying me for it.
That's the true achievement. That's the real achievement in this industry, is to get to the point when no one will tell you off for sharing. So what's ahead for you, Owen? Obviously, it's probably hard to get see past finally Ben Like getting in people's eyes and ears, what's ahead?
Well, I've written another film that I'm trying to get financed, and I'm taking meetings with people. I have a manager in LA now, so I'm taking meetings over there, and you know, having a few projects that I could be attached on as a director. Nothing that I can talk about right now, but things are moving forward. So,
I mean, I'll kind of end on one of my favourite things on set and since we filmed has been any time either of us are excited about a film or TV show. We'll have a little message back and forth. So what's been catching your eye in recent times, either films in the last year or TV shows? What's been... It was always good because it felt like we had very much a shared opinion in things. And there was... I remember at one point someone was mentioning... It was a Netflix film. I think it was The Babysitter or something like that. And it was good because, again, we were all like, it's not highbrow or amazing, but it's really enjoyable. It's a really good little film. So I like those conversations where it doesn't all have to be, have you seen Lahane? You know, it doesn't all have to be the highbrow. It can be, yeah, that's great, but also, have you seen this new Marvel film? It's kind of good balance. So what's kind of been exciting you've like? I'm putting you on the spot now, but I rambled a bit longer intentionally to give you time to think.
Well, I'm... As you know, because we already talked about it, but I'm a huge fan of Peaky Blinders.
Yes.
But I also, watched a TV series on Netflix that I really liked, which was called The Spy with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And I liked it for different reasons. I really liked it because I always love when I see an actor doing something different.
Yeah.
Mm. And I don't know if you guys watched it yet, but it's really good and You don't care if Sacha Baron Cohen did some comedy before. He's just great in the part.
Fantastic.
And so I really like that. And what I really liked is that I love those miniseries. I think it's a really good format today because there's so many things to watch that, you know, five 1-hour episodes, it's perfect for me.
It's the reason I loved Criminal. Have either of you watched Criminal?
Not yet. It's amazing
because it's... three episodes and it's a different crime each time, but it's all just again it makes you buzz in from inside the industry because you're like it's all in one location because it's all just in the interview room. There's the interview room, the other side of the glass and the corridor.
David Tennant, right?
Yeah David Tennant is in the first one, Gemma Arterton I think in the in the second. Amazing people in it, but there's just three episodes, but then there's three in Germany and three in France and three in Spain, I think was the other one, and they're all standalone. They're all, it's the same in Germany, it's the same crew of policemen, but it's a different crime each time. And it's such a simple idea, but that kind of, again, the miniseries thing I love because me and my partner watch all three of the English one on one Sunday. It's like, well, that's cool, I've got that, but then I was like, well, I fancy the German one now. I'd heard the German one was great, and then
because there are so many things to watch right now that I find it really hard to be able to watch 10 episodes of a TV series, even when it's a series that I like.
It's mad, isn't it?
That's
it's
terrible.
Mad. The mentality, I'm trying to train myself out of that, but because I've had that before. Again, me and my partner are flicking through, we're like, oh, this series looks good. Oh, it's 12 episodes. I don't know about it.
It's a marathon.
But that's 12 episodes of something really good. This should be a positive thing. Apparently, it's the best thing ever made, but there's a lot of it. It's like more of the best thing ever made.
Seems
wonderful. More ice cream. Sounds like a great thing. You wouldn't go, I love that ice cream, but there's two scoops.
I can't eat so much. No. Yeah. But that's funny because, you know, I think people are going to start coming back to movies because of that. Because sometimes, some evenings, I would rather try to find a film to watch than a TV series. Exactly for that reason.
You just have that one hit.
Exactly.
And it's over. This is one of the great things about films is that the journey to it is the joy, is the experience as well. You know.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, one of the films I love, one of the things I saw yesterday for the second time, which I adored, is Joker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the best film of the year. I just found it absolutely incredible.
That was amazing. Yeah.
His ability to turn a man into a kind of enemy of you, an enemy like that is really I'm incredible.
Well, that was the beauty of the patience of the director and his actor. That
it was.
He doesn't really become anything that you would really perceive as realistically the Joker until the last quarter, at the most, maybe less. His journey from the character at the start to the character at the end, it's completely believable.
Yeah.
It's not some, he's fallen in a vat of acid and he's changed. It's this believable journey, but it's such a physical and emotional journey. Yeah.
That's the thing. The line between when the Joker becomes the idea of the Joker was kind of much more clear there because there's not a massive... there's a very, very small line that's crossed in order to get to that place, you know, and the progression to that was very, very well done.
Exactly.
So I love The Joker. I've seen it twice since it came out, and I just adore it.
It's got me intrigued as to if it could be ever part of the wider universe, because I can't imagine any other characters in the first chunk, but once he's become the Joker...
That's the thing.
Because I think... Robert Pattinson is a hugely underrated actor. I think he's a fantastic cast in his Batman.
He is.
High Life was amazing. Recently,
have you seen Good Times?
Yeah, Good Times is amazing.
Amazing in Good Times. Yeah.
And so I think I could see his Batman in interacting with Phoenix's Joker.
Me too.
Yeah. So there is this kind of that's exciting. But then equally, I don't want it to be ruined.
No, no.
I kind of like it as a standalone. It's like, don't fucking please. It might work just as a standalone, but yeah.
But that would be a fantasy, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To have that kind of style of DC characters brought to life in that way.
Completely.
I would adore it. I think it'd be incredible. As far as TV series, the not dissimilar to Criminal, the show I enjoyed most watching, which I haven't watched the second season of yet, is Mindhunter.
Yes.
It is
amazing, isn't it?
Incredible. I mean, I was floored by it. I thought it was so amazingly done. And I was going to check my phone a second ago to make sure that I definitely remember the director's name, because sometimes it just goes in one ear and out the other. But David Fincher.
It's Fincher.
But I found it just absolutely incredible, because it's another one of these, the way it's executed, the patience that you mentioned with Joker, but the execution of a criminal like I'm just going to call him Edmund or Ed Wood, because that's the main name, but one of the primary serial killers, the way in which he recants the murders that he commits, the way in which it's done permits the audience almost complete access into a very calm train of thought that tells the story of such appalling events. And I find all that so incredible, that the ability to be able to do that, because it shows how the human mind has so many different levels on which it thinks that it's acting rationally, individually, what can be perceived. I think the reason that I love Joker was because what we perceive as insane is the result of something, is the result of circumstances.
Yeah.
That the idea of insanity is actually not, is that we always treat insanity as though it's this terrifying alien thing.
Yeah, it's a
monster. The thing is that it's all around us, you know what I mean? And it is us, you know what I mean? And I really, really love that. I like how media and films and television are opening that door into just how irrational a beings we really are.
Yeah,
and how normal it can seem to be so irrational.
That's exactly it. It's the normalness that's nailed there, because both of those, Mindhunter as a series and Joker, somehow make the most unimaginable monsters somewhat relatable.
That's the thing.
You can watch and go, I would never go there, but I can see this and I can understand that, which is hugely important. I think it's that's really a massive thing in cinema. And in the real world, because again, it's the reality is, in the real world, we don't actually have monsters.
Mm.
We have people with a smile on their face doing these horrible... Do you know what I mean? These
horrendous
things.
Yeah,
it's getting that reality of, the monster smiles its way under your bed. It doesn't
growl. Yeah, absolutely.
It's fascinating. Yeah. Well, I'll wrap things up there. Where can people keep up to date on everything? Obviously, Ben Like has its own social media, but you guys as well. So, do you want to go first, Owen?
You can go on Kill Ben Like on Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. Excellent. And you can
and it's LYK. I should mention that's an easy one to
absolutely
forget.
LYK, and so you're gonna be able to buy some tickets on the Our Screen website.
I'll put all the details and links as this goes up. So that's all.
So everything will be on there, and hopefully you guys will share the good news
and we'll
get started.
Get it all out there. And Eugene, where can people keep up to date on all your activities?
You can see all things me on Eugene Snaps on Instagram, and follow me on Twitter at Eugene_Simon, and the same on Facebook. And that's how you'll keep in contact with me.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
That was great. Awesome.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. I hope you enjoyed that. As you can hear, we were all really excited to work on this film, and if you're not sold on it already, I don't know what to do. But as I said, head to ourscreens.com and search Kill Ben Like. Or there's links. I'll have links all over my social media and in the bio bit of this episode. So come along. It'd be great. In fact, let's have a little look. I'll let you know where these screenings are. So, Odeon Swiss Cottage, View Croydon, View Fulham, Broadway View, Harrow View, Romford. I used to go out to Romford all the time for Metal Nights at Hollywood's. I'd love that one to sell out and happen. View Shepherd's Bush, View Staines, View Thurrock. As I mentioned, I worked in Lakeside for years. View Watford, View Cramlington. I don't even know where that is. View Fulham Broadway, View Glasgow, View Islington, View Leeds, View Longwell Green, View Piccadilly, View Sheffield, View Wood Green. If I'm repeating any of these, it's multiple showings. Odeon Wimbledon, Odeon Belfast, Odeon Streatham, Odeon Guildford, Odeon Uxbridge, Odeon Birmingham Broadway, Odeon Liverpool, this is boring, Odeon Manchester, Great Northern, Odeon Swiss Cottage again. I think the rest of them are all repeats. Odeon Brayhead, I don't think I'd mention that one. Odeon Birmingham Broadway again. Genesis Cinema London, that's a cool little small one. Empire Sunderland, Savoy Cinema Nottingham. So yeah, these are all over that or they're mainly over the 22nd, 23rd and 24th of November. So it'd be really cool if you can swoop. And it'd make me look really cool if this podcast has an impact on those ticket sales. I ain't going to lie. If this podcast comes out and suddenly there's a big boom in ticket sales, how cool am I going to look? I'm going to look like I've got box office power. And the next thing you know, I'll be next to The Rock and Kevin Hart in something exciting. Thank you for tuning in. I've even left off the Patreon and speechdevelopment.com plugs on this one because, yeah, I just want you all to come and see this film. Hope you enjoyed it, and I will be back next week. Oh, who have I got next week? Is it? I'm checking. It's DJ Shadow. Oh, man, that's a good one. I've got two next week as well, actually. I've got DJ Shadow and James Mangold, and they're both amazing. So I'll see you all next week. Thank you for tuning in. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.